Okay, so today we're going to jump into something that I think is super important for anyone who's thinking about going into nursing,
Yeah.
and that is how we manage care during pregnancy.
Absolutely.
So this is really foundational
It
stuff.
is.
We're going to kind of walk through, pulling straight from chapter 12 and the study materials that go along with that, and really try to give you a good sense of what are the key nursing responsibilities when we are supporting someone through pregnancy.
Yeah, and we're talking even before conception,
Right.
all the way to, those assessments that we're doing for fetal well-being. That's a
Exactly.
big chunk of information.
It is. So we're going to try to make sure that you come away with a really clear and detailed understanding of all of it.
Totally. And, I think it's really about building that bedrock
Yeah.
of knowledge that you'll use as future nurses to deliver really comprehensive care, and evidence-based care. So
Yeah.
not only knowing what to do,
Right.
but why we're doing it for both the person who's pregnant and that developing baby.
Absolutely. So let's just jump right in
Okay.
and let's start with preconception and interconception care.
Great.
Now, preconception care is, as I understand it, this is all about optimizing health before pregnancy even begins.
Exactly.
So we're really setting the stage
Yes.
for the healthiest possible pregnancy.
Exactly. It's about getting someone's health in the best possible state
Okay.
to really improve their chances of having a healthy pregnancy
Yeah.
and having a positive outcome. And there's several really important components that our sources highlight.
Okay.
So first up is this really comprehensive health history review. So looking at things like, do they have any chronic conditions,
Right.
diabetes, hypertension?
Huh.
What medications are they currently taking?
Yeah.
Do they have a history of infections? Just trying to identify any potential areas of concern really early on.
Makes sense. And then it's not just what's happening inside the body, right?
Right.
Nutrition, I feel like, is a huge piece of this.
Huge, absolutely.
Yeah.
So nutritional counseling is a big cornerstone of this preconception care.
Okay.
And one of the biggies that our materials talk about is folic acid supplementation,
Yes.
specifically 400 to 800 micrograms a day.
Okay.
And that's so important because that plays a role in that neural tube closure
Right.
in those first few weeks of pregnancy,
Yeah.
oftentimes even before someone even knows they're pregnant.
Wow.
So making sure that those levels are adequate right from the get-go
Yeah.
is super important to prevent things like neural tube defects.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay,
Okay.
so then we have lifestyle modifications,
Yes.
which, might sound simple,
Right.
but these changes can have such a big impact.
They really can.
Yeah.
And the sources are really clear about, the need to stop smoking, to cut out alcohol consumption and any illicit drug use,
Of course.
because these things can have such a negative impact both on the pregnant person
Yeah.
and the developing baby.
Right.
So addressing these things even before conception is ideal.
Absolutely. And then immunizations, I feel like that's another key aspect here.
Absolutely. And depending on someone's immunity history, they might need things like rubella,
Okay.
varicella, hep B.
Right.
And that's really to protect them during the pregnancy and the baby as well.
And then genetic counseling is another important piece of this.
Yes, particularly for people who have a family history
Right.
of any kind of genetic condition.
Okay.
It's a good idea to have that counseling.
Yeah.
Talk about potential risks, explore testing options, all that good stuff.
Thanks. Okay, so that's preconception care.
Right.
Then we have interconception care, and that's the care someone receives between pregnancies,
Exactly.
which is also so important.
Yeah, it's about optimizing health in that period between pregnancies
Right.
to lead to better outcomes in future pregnancies.
Okay.
And one of the things that our material really highlights is birth spacing. So specifically waiting at least 18 months between the end of one pregnancy
Okay.
and the start of the next.
Gotcha.
That really gives the body a chance to recover fully.
Right.
And studies have shown that it can really reduce the risk of complications in the next pregnancy.
Okay, so that's kind of our foundation that we build on. So
Yeah.
now let's say someone is pregnant. What are some of the things that might put them at higher risk for adverse outcomes?
So there are a number of maternal risk factors
Okay.
that can increase the likelihood of having some kind of negative pregnancy outcome.
Okay.
Maternal age is a big one.
Okay.
The sources point out that, if someone is younger than 16 or older than 35,
Okay.
there are increased risks.
Gotcha.
Weight is another big one.
Mm-hmm.
So both obesity and being underweight can have negative effects on the developing baby.
Which makes sense intuitively, right?
Yes, totally.
What about if they have any kind of pre-existing health condition?
Yes. So things like diabetes, hypertension, thyroid disorders,
yeah.
All of those need really careful management throughout the pregnancy.
Right.
Because they can pose risks to both the pregnant person and the fetus.
Okay.
And of course, substance use remains a major concern.
Right. Tobacco, alcohol, drugs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then inadequate prenatal care.
Okay.
So maybe delaying those prenatal appointments or not coming consistently.
Right.
Can also lead to complications because things might not be caught early.
Gotcha. And their history with previous pregnancies, I imagine, also comes into play.
It does. So if there's been a history of preterm birth, stillbirth, or any kind of pregnancy loss, that can increase the risk of those things happening again.
Right.
And then finally, we need to think about environmental exposures.
Okay.
Things like lead radiation, certain workplace hazard.
Right.
All of those things can also have a negative impact.
Yeah. It seems like really understanding these risk factors just kind of sets the stage for how we approach care.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that initial prenatal visit. Seems like a very important and thorough appointment.
Yeah, it's a big one. It's really about establishing a baseline.
Okay.
And catching any of those potential risks early.
Okay.
So it involves a really complete health history,
mm-hmm.
a full physical exam, and then a bunch of lab tests.
Gotcha. So let's break down the health history first. What are the key areas we're focusing on?
So the obstetric history is really important. So we want to document the gravida, which is the total number of pregnancies someone's had, regardless of the outcome.
Okay.
And the para, which is the number of pregnancies that have reached that viability. So usually 20 weeks of gestation.
Okay.
And have resulted in a live birth or a stillbirth.
Gotcha.
And we also want to make note of any complications that happened in those previous pregnancies.
Okay.
The menstrual history is also really important.
Yeah.
Particularly the date of the last menstrual period, because that helps us estimate the due date.
Right. And then beyond just the pregnancy specific stuff, what else are we asking about?
So a detailed medical and surgical history.
Okay.
Noting any chronic illnesses,
mm-hmm.
any past surgeries they've had.
Okay.
The family history is really important.
Yeah.
To see if there's any genetic conditions or a history of birth defects in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And then the psychosocial history is a really important part of this.
Okay.
So that's things like assessing their mental health, their support system.
Okay.
Substance use history.
Right.
It really gives us a holistic view of their well-being.
Yeah.
And helps us see what kind of support they might need.
That's a lot of information just for the history portion.
It is.
What about the physical exam? What does that usually involve?
So the physical exam has several important parts, too.
Okay.
We start by taking vital signs.
Okay.
So blood pressure, pulse, respiratory rate, temperature. We take their weight and their BMI.
Okay.
See where they are at the start of the pregnancy. And that helps us figure out, like, what kind of weight gain is appropriate.
Gotcha.
And then we'll usually do a pelvic exam.
Okay.
To assess the size of the uterus and look at the cervix.
Gotcha. And then we've got the lab tests.
Yes. Lots of lab tests.
What are those telling us?
So those lab tests give us a ton of information about their health status and any potential risks.
Okay.
So we determine their blood type and Rh factor.
Okay.
Because if there's any Rh incompatibility between the pregnant person and the baby, that could cause complications.
Gotcha.
We do a CBC.
Yeah.
To check for things like anemia and infection, rubella titer, see if they're immune to rubella.
Okay.
We do screening for HIV, syphilis, hep B, to prevent those from being transmitted to the baby.
Okay.
A urinalysis to check for protein glucose.
Right.
Any signs of infection in the urine. Usually a pap smear to screen for any abnormalities in the cervix.
Okay.
And then genetic screening might be offered depending on their history.
Gotcha. So it seems like that first visit really lays the groundwork.
Yeah, lots of information gathered there.
Okay, so what about follow-up visits?
Okay.
So those are more focused on monitoring, I imagine?
They are. Those follow-up visits are really all about monitoring how the pregnant person is doing.
Okay.
And how the baby is developing. And the visits get more frequent as the pregnancy goes on.
Okay.
So our sources say that typically
Okay.
You know, you're seeing someone every 4 weeks
Mm-hmm.
until about week 28.
Okay.
Then it bumps up to every 2 weeks from week 28 to week 36.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's weekly visits from week 36.
Wow.
Until the baby is born.
Okay, so what are we doing at each of these follow-up appointments?
So several key assessments happen at each visit.
Okay.
We keep track of their weight gain.
Okay.
We monitor their blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
After about 20 weeks, we start measuring their fundal height.
Okay.
Which is the distance from the top of the uterus to the pubic bone.
Okay.
And that gives us an idea of the gestational age.
Okay.
And helps us see if the baby is growing as we expect.
Yeah.
We also listen to and record the fetal heart rate.
Okay.
That normal range is usually between 110 and 160 beats per minute.
Okay.
And then around 28 weeks,
mm-hmm.
we start assessing fetal movement.
Okay.
So often we teach them how to do kick counts.
Yeah.
Where they're monitoring how many times they feel the baby move.
Right.
In a certain amount of time.
Right. So it's very systematic.
It is.
We're checking in all the time.
Yep.
I imagine another crucial part of that ongoing care is really teaching the pregnant patient about when they need to seek immediate attention.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
We really need to empower them to recognize those potential complications.
Right.
And know when to call their doctor or get to the ER.
Yeah. So what are some of the most important danger signs that we should be emphasizing?
Okay. So severe headache.
Okay.
Especially if it's accompanied by blurred vision or spots in their vision, can be a sign of preeclampsia.
Okay.
Which is serious.
Right. High blood pressure protein in the urine.
Exactly.
Okay.
Any vaginal bleeding.
Yeah.
Or if there's a sudden gush or leaking of fluid from the vagina.
Okay.
That could be a sign of problems with the placenta.
Okay.
Or a premature rupture of membranes.
Right.
Severe abdominal pain.
Okay.
Needs to be checked out right away.
Yeah.
Because it could indicate an ectopic pregnancy.
Okay.
Or preterm labor.
Gotcha.
If there's a noticeable decrease in fetal movement.
Yeah.
Like the baby's not moving as much as they usually do.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a sign of fetal distress.
Okay.
And then painful urination or fever could indicate a UTI.
Right.
Or another kind of infection.
Right. So those are things that people really need to be aware of.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's talk about assessing fetal well-being.
Okay.
Throughout the pregnancy.
Yep.
There seems to be a lot of different ways that we do this.
There are lots of different tests and methods that we can use.
Right. Okay. So let's start with ultrasonography.
Okay.
I know that's a very common one.
Yeah, it's super versatile.
Right.
It uses sound waves to create those images of the fetus in real time.
Yeah.
So we can see how big the baby is, the position in the uterus,
mm-hmm.
how much amniotic fluid is around the baby.
Right. And a first trimester ultrasound that's really helpful for dating the pregnancy.
It is. Yeah. We can get a pretty accurate idea of how far along someone is based on the size of the baby.
Okay, cool. What about Doppler flow studies?
So Doppler flow studies are a specific type of ultrasound
okay.
that lets us look at blood flow in the placenta and the umbilical cord.
Okay.
So this is really helpful in high-risk pregnancies.
Okay.
Like if someone has hypertension
mm-hmm.
or if there are concerns about the baby's growth.
Gotcha.
It can tell us how well the baby's getting oxygen and nutrients
right.
from the placenta.
So are there specific things that we're looking for in the Doppler flow study?
Yeah, so we're analyzing those sound waves and looking for patterns that might suggest that the placenta isn't working as well as it should be.
Okay.
So, for example, if there's consistently high resistance in the umbilical artery,
okay.
that might be a sign of placental insufficiency,
okay.
meaning that the placenta isn't delivering enough
gotcha.
For what the baby needs.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Then there's also this alpha fetoprotein analysis.
Yes, AFP.
AFP. Okay, so what's that all about?
So alpha fetoprotein is a protein
okay.
that the baby's liver makes.
Okay.
And by measuring the levels of AFP in the pregnant person's blood,
mm-hmm.
we can screen for certain conditions in the baby.
Okay.
So for example, if the AFP levels are really high,
okay.
that could be a sign of neural tube defects.
Okay.
Like spina bifida or anencephaly.
Mm-hmm.
And if the levels are lower than expected,
okay.
it could indicate an increased risk of Down syndrome.
Gotcha. So it's kind of like a screening tool.
Exactly.
To see if further testing is needed.
Yep.
Okay. And that kind of connects to the marker screening tests. Like the quad screen.
Right.
So what's going on with those?
So those marker screening tests, like the quad screen,
okay.
involve measuring several substances in the pregnant person's blood.
Okay.
Usually things like AFP,
yeah.
human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG,
okay.
estriol, and inhibin A.
Okay.
And we take those measurements along with the person's age and gestational age.
Mm-hmm.
And we use all that to calculate a risk assessment.
Okay.
For conditions like Down syndrome, trisomy 18,
mm-hmm.
and neural tube defects.
Gotcha. So it's another kind of screening tool.
Exactly. It's not a diagnostic test.
Right.
It just helps us see who might need further testing.
Okay. Then there's also this nuchal translucency screening.
Yes.
What is that one?
So that's another ultrasound test.
Okay.
And it's usually done in the first trimester.
Okay.
And basically, we measure the fluid-filled space at the back of the baby's neck.
Okay.
And if that space is thicker than normal,
mm-hmm.
it can be associated with an increased risk of certain chromosomal abnormalities like Down syndrome.
Okay, so all of these are really just to kind of get an idea of whether there might be any issues.
Exactly. They're not giving us a definitive diagnosis.
Right.
But they can help us decide if more invasive testing is needed.
Gotcha. So speaking of invasive testing.
Yeah.
There's amniocentesis and chorionic villus sampling.
Yes, those are the big ones.
And those are more risky.
So those are considered diagnostic procedures.
Okay.
So they can actually give us a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But they do come with some risks.
Okay.
So amniocentesis is usually done after 15 weeks.
Okay.
And we take a small sample of the amniotic fluid.
Right.
And that fluid has fetal cells in it.
Okay.
And we can analyze those cells
mm-hmm.
for genetic abnormalities.
Okay.
And then later in pregnancy.
Yeah.
Amnio can also be used to assess fetal lung maturity.
Okay.
But there's a small risk of miscarriage.
Right.
And infection.
Gotcha.
And then chorionic villus sampling, or CVS,
okay.
involves taking a small sample of placental tissue, usually between 10 and 13 weeks.
Okay, so earlier than amnio.
Yes, and because the placenta and the baby develop from the same fertilized egg,
right.
that placental tissue can also be analyzed for genetic abnormalities.
So it's kind of giving us the same information?
It is.
Yeah.
But it lets us get that information earlier.
Right, but is it riskier?
It does carry a slightly higher risk of miscarriage than amnio.
Gotcha. So with these tests, it's really important to talk through
absolutely
the risks and benefits with the patient.
Really important. Informed consent is key.
Absolutely. Okay. So now let's talk about the non-stress test.
Okay. NST.
NST. Yeah, that sounds less invasive.
Much less invasive.
Okay.
So the non-stress test is a really simple way to check on the baby's well-being.
Okay.
We basically monitor the baby's heart rate for about 20 to 30 minutes.
Okay.
And we're watching how the heart rate responds to the baby's movements.
Okay.
So a reactive NST, which is what we want to see,
okay.
shows that the fetal heart rate increases or accelerates at least twice in that 20-minute period.
Okay.
And each of those accelerations needs to last for a certain amount of time and reach a certain number of beats per minute above the baseline.
Okay.
So if we don't see those accelerations,
okay.
that's called a non-reactive NST.
Okay.
And that might mean that the baby's under some stress.
Okay.
And we need to do some more testing.
Gotcha. Okay. And then the last one we'll talk about is the biophysical profile.
Okay. The BPP.
The BPP. Okay. Tell me about that one.
So that one's a bit more comprehensive.
Okay.
It combines the non-stress test.
Okay.
with an ultrasound.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at five different things.
Okay.
Fetal breathing movements.
Okay.
Gross fetal movements.
Mm-hmm.
Fetal tone.
Okay.
The amount of amniotic fluid.
Right.
And fetal heart rate reactivity, which is the NST.
Okay.
So each of those five things gets a score.
Okay.
And the total score, usually out of 10,
mm-hmm.
gives us an overall assessment of how the baby's doing.
Okay.
So a score of 8 to 10 is good. Reassuring
yeah.
lower scores might mean fetal distress.
Right.
And we need to do some more investigating and potentially intervene.
So we've covered so much today. It is so clear that nursing management during pregnancy is just so important.
It's essential.
And complex.
It is.
You know, we've talked about preconception care, interconception care.
Yep.
Those critical risk factors. What happens at that first prenatal visit?
Right.
All the follow-up care,
yep.
all the danger signs,
super important,
and all those different ways that we assess fetal well-being,
mm-hmm.
it's really amazing how much knowledge and attention to detail goes into this.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, this deep dive has given us a really solid understanding
yeah.
of what nurses need to know to provide this really crucial care.
And to provide the best support
exactly.
to people throughout their pregnancies.
Absolutely.
It's pretty amazing.
It is.
So thinking about everything that we've covered mm-hmm. and the, you know, responsibility of caring for pregnant people and their babies,
mm-hmm.
what do you think is going to be the most, you know, intricate or maybe rewarding part of this for you?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think it's really about how do we take all of this knowledge
right.
and apply it in a way that provides proactive and preventative care
right.
to people throughout pregnancy.
Mm.
It's really about empowering them
yeah.
to have the healthiest pregnancy possible.
It's exactly. And I think it's something to really think about
yeah.
as you continue learning more
absolutely.
About maternal newborn nursing.
For sure.
So much to learn.
Always.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.